story time. The time during the week where we talk about what happened during our campaign. Our favorite moments, what we learned about ourselves, and what we learned about each other. Please join us now as we enjoy story time.
All right, so we're back for another edition of story time this week. And just a quick recap of last story time for the Voyage of the Unending Sea. You may remember that Captain Garzak was engulfed by a dragon turtle. We thought he might be dead. He popped up out of the water, and he had no leg. His right leg was completely gone, like slightly, you know, just a little bit below the hip. And so we pulled him up. He's laying on the ship, and we're like, thank goodness our captain is not dead. And so that's where we pretty much started the night, was like, he's coming out of his like comatose state where he's just not responsive at all. He wakes up to see Didymus finishing healing on his legs, but he doesn't really know what's going on. He just knows that he's unconscious. And
Didymus is the ship's cleric, a satyr.
He's slowly healing Captain Garzak. Captain Garzak's not really aware of what's going on. He doesn't realize that his leg is missing yet. Until, did he try to stand up or something, or did he just look down and he just screamed?
Yeah.
I don't really remember which one it was, but one of those two things happened, and he just let out this huge scream of just, it wasn't quite pain, but it was more like, what the heck happened
shock.
To my leg? It was just more shock than anything. And so luckily we have our good buddy Cedric on the boat, who is an artificer who can make and tinker with things to help him get a new leg. And so Captain Garzak's walking around now with this leg that is made out of cannonballs and different metal materials. And he's got essentially this metal leg that's pretty stinking awesome. And Mark's character, Cedric, had made it into almost like a sort of automaton-type leg that could move.
Well, yeah, he got really into it.
Yeah,
I mean, he made an attachment and a detachment part because they're like, well, if he ever lands in the water, he's going to sink, so we need to make it be able to detach so he can keep going. And then he's like, oh, at level 7 I can make your leg into an automaton that will listen to me. And we're all sitting around the table and we're like, I don't know if you want to do that, Caleb, because if Mark's character ever gets mad at you, then he might just tell your leg to walk off.
Bummer. Just walk off the edge and not be able to detach. That would be a very interesting way to go out. And so, we're sailing along. That happened. We're sailing along, and off in the distance, Dordain sees through his spyglass, he sees a ship off on the horizon, and we're like 150 days out at sea at this point. We haven't seen another ship. The only real life that we've seen are
besides the two that are on your side.
Right. Yeah. We haven't seen any other ships that aren't a part of our crew. We've seen a couple of living things that have all tried to kill us at this point. So we're pretty wary of anything that moves out in the ocean. And we see the ship just kind of sitting there. It's not moving. It's not really doing anything. It's just sitting there. And so as a group, we had this moment where it was like, okay, what do we do? Like, it looks like it's heading the opposite direction of us. It looks like it's pointing the way we came from. So, you know, what is it? Is it like a haunted ship of legends? Is it this thing just out in the middle of the ocean that's going to have a ghost crew and, you know, essentially like the Flying Dutchman of our world? Is that what we're going to run into? Are we going to run into people that are friendly, that are like on the same type of mission that we are? Are they coming from the other side of the world, if there is another side of the world? Like,
yeah, some of the players got excited. They definitely were on the side of, oh, we're getting close. I bet you this is a ship from the other side. Some of the players and who have decided their player characters think that the world of Atos is round.
Yeah. And so we thought through that, and then we had a couple of other discussions about what could this thing possibly be. I think at one point we had talked about even just like skipping over it and just keep on going, because what happens if they're hostile and they start to attack us, you know, and we get this far and then we just sink? Like, what happens at that point in time? Like, do we instantly regret that we went to go and talk to a friendly ship and they end up being just terrible, terrible people? And so we eventually decided that, you know, we're running low on food, we're running low on water, we're running low on all of these things. We have to go out on a limb and talk to these people, because even if they're not from the complete other side of the world and they just have an island nearby at least that's a place that we can potentially refuel and get more food and more water and more supplies, because that's a real problem for us right now. Like, that's a real, real problem for our characters. And so we start heading over there, and we get closer and we get closer, and Duordain is still looking through his spyglass, and we get closer and closer. There's no signs of life at all on the ship. Like, there's nobody walking around on the top of the ship. And he's relaying this all to Captain Garzak. He's relaying, too, that it looks like there's seaweed growing up along the outsides of the ship and, like, up the mast a little bit. And it's just, it's one of those moments that's like, okay, I don't think that this is anything that's good. It's probably more along the lines of haunted. That's probably where this story is going to go. And we had to make a decision at that point. Like, do we decide to board it? Do we decide to just skip over it? Because everything's completely dead, and it looks like it's been, you know, like, it looks like it's been abandoned for quite a while. Like, will there be anything valuable left on this ship? And we saw on the back of the ship too that this name was the Rising Sun. And so at this point in time, this even started to make our characters, some of our characters, think, oh, the Rising Sun, they must be from the other side of the world. Like, they're sailing into where the Rising Sun come from. Like, that's, that must be why they have this name painted on the back there. They must be coming from the other side of the world. And so even more so, our players wanted to board the ship at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. So you guys get into the one lifeboat that you guys have left from the attack from the Dragon Turtle. And of course, it is the group of PCs. And along with you, you take your ship's herbologist, because you're like, maybe he can check out the seaweed and see if it's edible and maybe figure out what exactly is going on. He wasn't able to, and it wasn't edible. We'll just skip ahead to that and just mention that now. And also, you took your favorite person, Chris. Stephen Creel came along with you because he said, I have a life debt to fulfill.
No, he said, I have a life debt.
I have a life debt to fulfill. I will watch after Sanjin. So he said that, and much to Sanjin's chagrin, Captain Garzak was like, Sanjin was like, don't bring him, Captain.
He's only going to slow
Garzak
us down.
Like, well, he can cast healing spells somewhat, so we'll bring him. And so you guys get to the ship, you board the ship. The ship is huge, and you reach the ship's deck, and you see skeletons all around. Fully armored skeletons. These are not animated skeletons. These are like dead men who their skin and organs have completely disappeared for whatever reason. Their armor is still there. And I think at this point, Cedric was trying to check the armor to see if there were signs of like, uh-oh, what killed these things? And noticed, you know, some of their armor was a little bruised and bent out of shape from battle, but there was no like mortal wounds that were visible. So the thought was these guys didn't get completely murdered by being on this ship. Because you guys are all like hesitant at this point. You're like, what the heck is going on?
Especially when we see the skeletons. Everything's dead. Okay, this is even creepier.
Yeah. One nice thing came out of this. The ship had lifeboats. You guys had just lost lifeboats. So you spent some time moving the lifeboats back to your ship so that you would have as many lifeboats as you had started out with. And then the crew, you guys decided, let's go to what assumingly is the captain's quarters. And so you did. It was locked for some reason. And then you guys tried to unlock the lock. Liriel did. And you noticed that it was barged on the other side. So Garzak, using his new leg, decided to kick through the door. And so you guys were eventually able to get inside the captain's quarters. And what did you find inside the captain's quarters, Chris?
Well, we found the captain, who was a skeleton.
He's like, hello.
I think he was sitting in his chair or something like that. I don't exactly remember. There was a couple of dog skeletons as well. Like, everybody had just long since been dead. There was a lot of empty booze bottles around. Like, he just went out, the only way that he knew how. He had some maps all over the table. There were keys. There was also a captain's log, which we ended up looking into and found out, unfortunately, I mean, at least this is what we're assuming happened, that they came from an island called Grimvale that all potentially...
You guys recognize.
Yeah, we've all heard of this before. Like, it's known as, like, this cursed land. Like, people should avoid it at all costs. It's not... I mean, it's a ways away from where we originated, but it's not terribly far away that we wouldn't have heard of it before. And so at that point in time, we were all just kind of like, ugh. Once again, we're back in the seat where we don't know if we're ever going to find the other side. We don't know what's yeah. over there. Like, this might just be hopeless, you know?
Well, and you guys looked at the date that was in there, and you realized this ship has been lost at sea for, like, over 200 years, which explained how this ship got so far without engines like you. It has basically been drifting for years and years and years and years. And we never talked about what exactly the seaweed was, but basically it had just started collecting seaweed more and more and more and more until it completely was covered in it and was almost like anchored in its spot over all these years of traveling and being lost at sea.
And we had, what, estimated that it was probably 200 years or so, something like that, that had just been drifting?
Yeah, the date was about 200 years that it had been lost at sea. And not, you know, the writing of the captain's journal got less and less coherent as it went along. So the exact date of their, whatever their demise was, it seemed like it was starvation and whatever, that they had completely just gotten lost from a whole big storm. They had perished from starvation, and assumingly the door was locked because the captain had more food and booze than anyone else on the ship.
So, you know, Zillicent earlier in this night had decided just to go down below the ship, which is always dangerous to split the party because, encounters don't change what their levels are. Like, you could just get completely erased if you go wandering off by yourself in a D&D campaign. So he decided to go down by himself. Of course, it makes sense. And we, after finding what we found in the captain's quarters, decided to join him down below the ship. And as we're going through this, we're like looking through different rooms. We're finding bunk beds with people that, you know, they're not in the beds. They're kind of all over the floor, and we just assume, like, if they died in their bed, they've fallen out because of storms and waves, and it's just a mess down below the deck. Like, it's...
You guys also found the storage where food was kept and other things, and it was all gone. Like, there was nothing, which was to be expected.
Yeah, once we heard that it was 200 years, it was pretty much all hope was given up of finding any sort of nourishment on this ship. And so we were walking around, and we saw... Like, I think I saw it, didn't I?
Yeah, you saw it first, yep.
On one of the walls, we saw, like, this yellowish, snot-looking thing sticking out of the wood. It was just, like, it was trying to, like, retract in, I think, is what it was. Like, it was trying to move about the ship, and we were like, what in the world is that? That's bizarre. Like, we don't have that on our ship. What in the world is it? And I think Zillicent did some punching through the walls to try and find it, and we lost sight of it. I mean, we didn't know what it was. We didn't know where it went. It was just, it was gone. And that was all we knew about that. And we were like, that's strange. Let's just hurry up and get the things that we need and get out of here, because that's not normal for a ship. And so I think we went down a couple more levels, like one or two more levels, and we found some very interesting areas of the ship.
Yeah, you guys came across three big iron doors, and Liriel, who had found some keys in the captain's office, was like, well, let me see if I can check this. And so she goes to the first, and there's a lot of keys, so she's going through them and checking them, and eventually she gets it open, and you guys find a weaponry, and there are some really nice weapons inside. Well, as you guys are all kind of focusing on the vault, Cedric is in the back, and he starts to notice what, Chris?
He noticed that the ooze, well, surprise, the stuff that was in the walls was starting to make bigger and bigger forms of itself around the stairs where we came down. And
on the ceiling.
And on the ceiling and on the walls where it could. And eventually they made shapes. I think at one point in time he tried to, like, put a dagger on it to see what it would do, and it just ended up, like, bubbling and sizzling a little bit, and he tried to pull it back out, and it, like, wouldn't let go. Like, it had some fight to it. It wasn't just like an ooze that is on the ground that you would slip in and you'd be fine. It was like, it was something a little bit more than that, that had a little bit of fight to it. And so,
yeah, you guys are rushing to open up all these doors. And basically, I think the captain was just like, get what you can and we're leaving. But you couldn't leave.
But we couldn't leave because the biggest of all of the globs had formed on the stairs and was blocking the way that we came through. And so it was this moment of like, all right, well, we have to fight our way out of this. And there was a lot of these oozes around. There was a lot of them.
So what exactly happened? You guys are trapped on the bottom level of this deck, and Cedric had an idea for escape. You guys couldn't really go up the stairs because you got big oozes in front of you, which if you actually are interested, they are the Orcrae jellies from the monster manual.
I knew that the minute that you said there was this yellow slime, I was like, oh no, yellow, dang it.
Yeah, and they're cool because they are very good at like retracting and hiding, where they can slip into any small space that they want. And they eat flesh, but they leave behind like bones and armor, and they don't affect any of that. So like the idea that this whole ship would have like been disintegrated would not have happened this way. So these things, somehow it had gotten on the ship and eaten its way through the flesh of all of the crew members. But yeah, you guys, so Cedric was like, all right, we can't go up the stairs. He runs into the armory that you guys had opened up. And what did he decide to do?
He decided that the only way to get out of this was to go through the bottom of the boat out into the ocean, which is very scary for a lot of people who can't breathe, and somebody who's a rock. Like, and somebody with a metal leg.
I'm going to die.
Yeah, it's a very scary proposal to make to a group who can't swim real well. I think Steven can't swim or something like that. I forget who couldn't swim.
Yeah, Steven can't
swim. So it's this moment of just like,
acolyte of Procon.
This is a really bad idea, but really cool for a story. So he casts Burning Hands on the floor, starts the floor on fire, and a couple of them start hitting the floor to try and, I think he was the only one at first that started to hit the floor to try and break open.
Yeah, he started calling them in, and half the group is trying to break through the floor, and you and Garzek and who else?
And Steven.
And Steven Creel, were outside fighting off these oozes, who the oozes started to form together and were creating this massive ooze monster that was just coming at you.
There was this moment I remember saying something to you like, there's this special ability with these things. I hope nobody uses slashing damage. And sure enough, they use slashing damage and split them in half. Yep. And it's like, this
they're
is
completely,
getting worse.
Yeah, they're sweet. They're because they're completely immune to slashing damage. It just splits them into two creatures that have half the amount of health as the original.
I was just like, stop doing that. Stop it right now. This is not good. We're all going to die if you keep hitting them that way. And we just eventually all backed up. Like, as a monk, I have this ability where with my Ki point, I can take a defensive stance, so I can dodge things really well, which was really effective when they formed into one massive jelly where the thing had disadvantage against me on attack rolls.
Yep.
So I just kind of played buffer so everybody else could get through. Steven, much to his chagrin, because he had a life debt, I eventually just told Garzak to grab him and go out through the bottom of the boat.
Because he wasn't leaving willingly.
Yeah, he wasn't leaving willingly.
which was annoying, I think, for players and for Sonjin. However, we talked about it afterwards, and it's pretty, I gotta say, it's pretty awesome that Steven, who is afraid of his own shadow, cares about Sonjin enough that he was risking his life. Whether or not he was actually not being helpful because he's not actually that helpful, like, it's still like, well, that's kind of cool that you're actually able to step up and be brave.
Well, I told him,
situation.
I was like, this is your life debt. Go through the hole in the floor. And he's like, no, my life debt is to take your place in death. And I was like, no. No. That's not what I meant. Just go through the floor. That'll be your life
debt.
That's
what he meant.
That's what he meant.
So Cedric comes up with this brilliant idea. Like, I was very, he like sent me a text like hashtag magic mark. Like, so what if I, because Zillicent is going to sink and die, or Zillicent has to go up the stairs by himself with this ooze monster because you guys can all swim. Magic Mark sends me a text and says, so what if I cast fly on Zillicent? And I had this moment of just thinking, and I was like, well, I don't know what the actual rules to that would be, but in my mind that makes 100% sense that you'd be able to fly through the water as well. And so I was just like, that's brilliant. So he did it to Zillicent. He cast flying on him so that he would be able to not sink like the stone that he is. And he also did it to Dordain, who could swim, but he had a little bit heavier of armor. And he also, from the armory, wanted to bring with him this plate mail that was covered in red rubies. And you guys had gotten a couple things from the armory and the weaponry and the treasury before you were able to leave. So the floor bursts open, water is pouring in, and what exactly went down here as you guys escaped?
Well, we eventually made our way through. The ooze was like able to reach through the doorway a little bit. We couldn't close the door, so it's like I'm still getting attacked. I'm running out of ki points. Everybody else is taking their turns. They're trying to push through the water. Cedric also had an idea to reverse the flow so it was easier for us to go out through that water.
Instead of pushing through it, he decided to
make it so it would essentially pull us out if we jumped into it. So that was all happening. Dordain grabbed the armor and jumped through. So he was flying with this metal plate armor. And we eventually all made it out. Captain Garzak detaches his leg and takes Steven with him.
goodbye, first leg.
So good thing we had that ability to detach it, because otherwise he would have been in real trouble. And so we had this moment where I finally made it out, and once again they reversed the flow so the ooze couldn't come out, which I'm not sure the ooze would have wanted to come out into the water, but they reversed the flow of this water, and we eventually got out and floated or flew back to the ship, and we saw the rising sun slowly sink into the water because slowly set itself down into the water for its forever sunset.
Yeah, and that was where we ended off. We took a brief moment afterwards to identify the stuff you had gotten. So you guys got a couple cool things, some awesome weapons, and one of them being a flail that the end lit on fire and could be acted as a torch and as a also it does. Obviously, more fire damage. I think the coolest thing that you guys ended up with is you got that plate mail with red rubies all over it, and there was a circlet with red rubies all over it, and you figured out that whoever wears the circlet gets to control the armor as if it was an animated set of armor as a companion. So that was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So you guys divided up all the cool loot that you guys had gotten. More loot went down with the ship. It was funny because there was a lot of gold in the treasury, and Caleb said, I don't think I've ever been less passionate about gold than I have during this campaign.
Right.
And it's like, well, it makes sense. And all that gold sank to the bottom of the ocean with the rising sun. But that's where we left off. You guys had voyaged to the rising sun, watched it set, and before we close out, and you have to wait another 2 weeks for another story time of Voyage on the Unending Sea, we have some words from the journal of Sonjen to listen to.
Day 142 on the Unending Sea. My philosophy on life continues to evolve. With friends being the only people that I have, I want to make the most out of our relationships. Their morale seems to be slipping, and the only way that I can think to help boost them is by sacrificing my own comforts to make sure that they are taken care of. My thoughts on this come from our latest excursion to the abandoned ship called the Rising Sun. We encountered something there that none of us had ever seen before, and I wasn't sure if we were going to make it out alive. Cedric had a plan, but we needed to buy time in order for it to work so that we could get off the ship. I was willing to remain behind if it meant that my friends would live, because these oozes kept growing. I didn't tell any of them this, but it was what I was thinking and feeling at the time. I now know that I want to emulate this with the rest of the crew. I think a crew of people who are willing to sacrifice when the times get tough instead of fending for themselves will make us the strongest crew to have ever sailed these seas. I must fight against this mystical force that is upon us that makes us fight among ourselves. It will not be easy, but it is what must be done.
Thanks for listening to this week's Storytime. We hope you've enjoyed these moments from our campaigns, stories about our characters, and what they have done within our worlds. We hope that you have enjoyed your time here, and we hope that you come back again next week for another edition of Storytime.